You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Recipe: how to make a radio station. Take one transmitter, one broadcasting tower, a small mountain, 10 cables, 4 CD players, 2 turntables, and a microphone. Stir in a bushel of talented people who don't care about making money. Combine 2,000 CDs with all your old vinyl, add 12 ounces of electricity, and as much imagination as you can pour in without spilling. Stir, shake, shimmy, and bake. Take a taste. How's it sound? Add a phone with an easy-to-remember number, 707-584-2020, and make it very, very easy for people to call. You need just one more ingredient, a listener who prefers locally grown, sustainably raised radio to those flavorless commercial alternatives. Sit back and watch your community station grow as one by one, all those listeners, you, call 707-584-2020 or visit krcb.org/donate. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour here on KRCB. I hope you are having a good weekend. Rain, more rain, surprised by rain on Friday and Sunday. That makes me so very happy. Maybe it'll make you even happy enough that you'll go to the phone and, or actually better yet, just go, you know, go make your membership donation at krcb.org/donate. That way you don't have to talk to anybody. You can do other things like listen to Mouthful. And I'm not going to do some big pitch, so don't worry. But I was thinking about Mouthful earlier today. So I did a little math. We have done somewhere between 760 and 795 live shows. Figure, even conservatively, 2 guests per show. We're close, you know, we're right there about 1,500 guests, but I think we're probably closer to 2,000 guests. I decided not to count how many miles that would have racked up on my car. But, and just so you know, most people who just listen to the radio and don't know anyone connected to the station don't realize this, but Mouthful is a 100% volunteer effort. I'm currently producing. I've had 3 or 4 producers over the 16 and a half years that Mouthful has run. Currently, I'm both producing and hosting. I was always a co-producer. Our engineer, I think this is our 4th or our 5th engineer, currently Mike Young, who's new and doing a great job. He's a volunteer. Everyone who works on Mouthful is a volunteer. I've been volunteering my time for 16 and a half years because I love radio. So anyway, I hope you, you know, if you're listening, I know you love radio because that's why you would listen. Sort of makes sense, you know. So I'm hoping that, you know, he's like, oh, am I a member? Yeah, I am. No, I'm not. I'll call or I'll donate. So anyway, there's my pitch. You'll hear some amusing enticements throughout the hour. But now, on to our guests. First, we have Mark Green. Welcome to Mouthful.
It's great to be back, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
And you know, I'm drawing a blank. I'm trying to remember when you were here before and why.
It's been 12 years. I was here to talk about the Rural Heritage Initiative.
Okay.
I was the executive director at Sonoma
that,
County Conservation
That actually
Action.
Would have been my guess, but yeah. It was a little fuzzy.
Yep. Long time.
Yes. God, that was 12. That's when we all had to all wear flak jackets.
2000. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was really scary. Now you're doing something really, you're reaching back far and fairly far into contemporary history.
Yeah, I'm here to tell your listeners about kind of an unusual thing that I'm doing. This is a sort of a one-off. What I want to do is to offer people an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, to do some time travel. As it turns out, and some of your listeners probably know this, this coming April is the 100th anniversary of the sinking of RMS Titanic on the night of April 14th, 1912. And I, like a surprising number of people, have been kind of a Titanic geek since I was a kid. I read Night to Remember when I was 10. And
now, what? Can you go back far enough in your memory? Like, what was it that interested you about the Titanic back then?
Sure. And actually, I think that's probably the most interesting question on the topic. Why does this story grab us so mm-hmm. much? Because there's a very odd history. This event was forgotten shortly after it happened.
Really?
No book was written about the Titanic disaster between 1913 and 1955, when Walter Lord, well, 56 was when he wrote A Night to Remember. Now, that was 40 years after the disaster, but it was still close enough that he was able to actually interview about 75 survivors and to get their stories. And when you read this, you realize that this is not a story. This is hundreds of stories, and they happen at every scale. They happen at the individual scale of a person trying to survive or trying to get their family out and succeeding or not, or a person trying to fulfill their duty or trying to escape their duty, or a person or a group of people kind of arrogantly and hubristically ignoring all of the information that could have told them not to get into this problem. All the way up to the societal level, where this disaster happens and it's this sudden moment of pause for the Edwardian society, where they suddenly take a look at the fact that more first-class men survived than third-class children. Well, what was that whole women and children first thing? I mean, we did a lot of flag-waving about that, but this leads us to questions about the way that we've structured the class in our society. Leads us to questions about our faith in technology. The Victorians really believed that through advancing technology, they were going to create the perfect world. And of course, the perfect world would all be English speaking and have English culture.
Christian.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this was a moment where technology failed spectacularly, and it killed very prominent members of the English speaking world society. And of course, within only 2 years, World War I would start, and we would get a real good look at what advances in engineering could do on the dark side.
One thing I'm curious about, in the short run, how quickly did information about the problem get back to England?
This is another interesting part of the story. It was only about 2 years after wireless communication had begun happening from steamships.
And wireless communication would have been telegram.
With Morse code.
Morse code, right.
Yes, yeah. But wireless as opposed to you have to
have the cable running.
Have the cable running, right?
And there, how was that transmitted wirelessly?
Through Morse code with a spark.
With a spark, okay.
Yes, I mean, there was no voice communication. It was all just, you know, the sound of a stuttering spark that was interpreted by the wireless operators and then, you know, written out as messages. So this was another part of the story, was that everyone on that ship, or nearly everyone on that ship, would have died if it wasn't for the wireless, because the capacity of lifeboats, as everyone knows, was far less than the number of people that were on board. But more than that, the temperatures involved were such that if the survivors had to sit out there in lifeboats for any length of time, mm-hmm. most of them would have frozen to death, even though they were in boats instead of in the water. Mm-hmm. The water temperature was 31 degrees, which you can't do with fresh water. You can only do with salt.
Right.
So people survived most of the time 5 minutes in the water.
Uh-huh.
And so this is, again, another confluence of factors. You know, here's this newfangled gadget that, of course, the largest, most luxurious, most technologically advanced vessel in the world has on board, the wireless communicator, right? Very exciting. Most of its bandwidth being taken up by messages from first-class passengers using the newfangled gadget to say hello to people on either back in England or going forward into the new world, which actually created somewhat of a problem, it turns out, because there was a ship less than 10 miles away called the Californian, which tried to contact the Titanic earlier in the evening to pass on more warnings of ice. They had already received 7 warnings of ice. And the wireless operator on board the Titanic said, "Shut up, shut up, shut up. I'm sending all these messages to Newfoundland. Get out of my way. You're blocking my signal." Wow. And the guy on the Californian said, "Well, what a rude guy," and shut down his wireless set for the night and didn't turn it back on until 6 o'clock the next morning. They were only 10 miles away.
Wow. And at what time did the Titanic hit the iceberg?
11:40 at night.
Okay. And we should say there's a whole local reason that we are talking about
I'm getting
this.
To that.
We should, you know, we should. There's an event coming up locally, so
yes.
we'll leave it there for now.
So,
and actually, you know what? I want to introduce my other guest, Jennifer Hedgepath, who is going to be talking about her Aunt Aggie's tomato smash. Tomato smash. I knew that. I kept wanting to say squash, but I wouldn't let it out of my mouth. Jennifer, welcome. And if you want to jump in with any questions, if Mark says something and it triggers something, feel free to jump in and we'll get to Aunt Aggie's in a little bit.
So I should cut to the chase because obviously, like I said, I'm a geek and I can go on about this for some time.
Geeks are really interesting on the radio. We love geeks on Mouthful.
So the point of all this is that with this 100th anniversary coming up, I was thinking, well, what could I do that would be really a cool kind of recognition of this? And I decided that what I wanted to do was to recreate the final first class dinner aboard the Titanic that was held that Sunday night and ended about an hour and 15 minutes before the ship struck the iceberg.
Oh, it ended that early.
Yes.
I mean, reading the menu, which is, I mean, we laugh today when there's like a 7 or 8 course menu. And I mean, this menu just goes on forever.
Yes. So what I'm doing in Cabianca restaurant in downtown Santa Rosa, which is a beautiful
Third Street, right?
Yeah, Second Street.
Second. Yeah. I always do that. Second Street. Beautiful
and
place.
It's a beautiful,
restored
Victorian. It used to
be the Marshall House.
Yes, I remember.
The Marshall House potato salad. It's in one of my, it's in California Home Cooking. That was a reason to go there, that potato salad.
Uh-huh. I don't think I ever had that there. I did go to the Marshall House, but I don't think I had it there.
I went there with a friend for his birthday. Went several people, but we went. We took John for his birthday, and you could get a plate of potato salad.
Wow.
And that was what John had for his birthday.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful restored Victorian. Mm-hmm. And this was part of the challenge for doing this event. You can't really do this in a banquet room and have
any way
have
you
the
need
right
chandeliers
feel.
You need all kinds of,
exactly.
of things.
You need a context that is like the luxurious context of 1912, and Cabianca really has that. So I've been working with Marco, the owner, and the chef to do a recreation of that actual dinner. A menu survived. And there were recipe books from the White Star Line which explained how to make each of these things.
And there's, somebody has written a book about it, which
yes.
I'm sure you know.
Yes.
I had that information all printed out and left it on my printer. So
yeah, there's a book called Last Dinner on the Titanic.
Yeah, with all the recipes.
Yes, it has recipes in it. So I decided that I wanted to do this on the 100th anniversary. And so we are organizing a Last Dinner on the Titanic at Cabianca Restaurant on April 14th.
What day of the week is that?
That's a Saturday night.
Okay. Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So tickets are very limited because the room is quite small.
About how many people can you
24
take?
Will fit in that room.
Only 24? And are you only going to do it in that one room?
Well, Marco has left it open that if there's a lot more interest, we can bump further out into the restaurant and we'll work out how to do that.
I think you should turn the whole house into it.
He said he would be absolutely open to that.
I think he should.
I can certainly
Let's
do that.
Let's go for it.
So this will be the 7-course dinner with stories from that night and musical performances between the courses, mm-hmm. so that it's kind of an immersion experience. And we ask the guests to dress in formal clothing.
That's one of my favorite parts. Oh, you can dress all the way up and you won't be a freak.
I'll be there in white tie and tails. All of the information about the event is available on the event website, and that includes recommendations about how to dress and link to get tickets. The website, and you'll be hearing me say this a lot, is www.tinyurl.com, so tinyurl.com/first-class-dinner, all one word.
Okay, we're going to take another little break, and we'll be right back.
Oh, honey, you turn me on. I'm a radio. I can be a country station. I can be a little bit corny, but I'm a wildwood flower waving for you. A broadcasting tower, baby, wailing for you. I'm sending you out this signal here, and I hope you can pick it up loud and clear.
Driving into town with the dark.
Because I know you don't like weak signals. You get bored so quick. And you don't like commercial signals because you're hip to their tricks. If there's no good reception, just tune me out. But if you're still listening, if you're still driving into town with that dark cloud above you, just dial in that number, 584-2020, who's bound to love you. If you're lying on the beach with your iPod going, kick off the sand, honey, because the love's still flowing. If your head says forget it, but your heart's still smoking, call me at the station. The lines are open. 584-2020 or krcb.org/donate.
That was fast, huh? We're talking with Mark Green about his upcoming April 14th tribute to the Titanic. Also with us is Jennifer Hedgepeth, and we'll be talking to her in just a little bit. Can we talk about the actual menu?
Sure. Okay. Sure. So, as I've mentioned before, but for people that are just tuning in, this is the actual menu that was served in the first class dining saloon on the night that the Titanic struck the iceberg and sank. It is a 7-course meal, and it begins with an hors d'oeuvre course that we're calling an amuse-bouche. There is not a surviving record of what that hors d'oeuvre was, so leaving that up to Marco to do something wonderful, or his chef. That is then followed by a fish course.
Now, I thought oysters and one other item were the amuses. I found that on some website yesterday.
Oysters were on another menu.
It's not the salon menu. Because you're doing the salon menu, right?
Well, there are two first-class menus that survived. One of them is not for that night.
Oh, okay.
It's for a previous night.
Oh.
Then there's also a second-class menu that survived. And I think a third-class breakfast, as I recall. The menu that we're doing, actually, as I understand it, survived in the pocket of a steward who did not survive. So we have the menu, but the steward didn't make it. So it begins with the hors d'oeuvre course, the amuse-bouche, and then it goes on to a fish course, which is it goes to the soup course, mm-hmm. which is Consommé Olga, which is it's a very pretty soup that has scallops in it, and it's just a sort of a lovely thing, and it looks like it's a pretty extensive process to create. Mm-hmm. I am not a ferocious cook, so I just look at these things and think, but that's about the extent of it. That is then followed by a fish course, which will be salmon mousseline, which is then followed by an entree course, and guests will have a choice of three items: chicken lyonnaise, filet mignon lili, or vegetable marins farci. And that is a bit of a fudge. There was not a vegetarian option in 1912.
I thought that sounded
but
kind of
this is a recipe that exists from that time period. Mm-hmm. But we want to give people an opportunity to eat what they're willing to eat. Obviously, the fish course and entree course are served with wine, so that's included in the price. The following course after that is a punch course, which is an alcoholic punch, which was meant to cleanse the palate. And that then is followed by a salad course, which is a mixed greens with a champagne vinaigrette. That is then followed by a dessert course, which is either Waldorf pudding or peach sorbet with coffee or tea. And those are your seven.
Oh, no, I had thought that they had, with the punch course, that I thought something, I thought there was a poultry course and a beef course after those two.
No. I've had to shorten the menu a little bit because otherwise people would be there until midnight.
Exactly. That was the sort of the menu that I read. I was like, oh, my God.
The thing that I really find confusing is the form of dress for women at that time was what they called the Gibson girl profile. Mm-hmm. Very exaggerated hourglass figure cinched in at the waist until, you know, it's no surprise that they were all seen as these dainty shrinking violets. They couldn't breathe.
Yeah, they fainted a lot. You know, so, that's why we had fainting couches.
I mean, how do you eat a 2.5 hour meal when you're, you know, cinched down to a 20-inch waist?
Well, women eat or did they push the food around on their plate?
Probably some of both, I would imagine.
I think they probably nibbled.
A lot of sniffing going on.
Yeah. Yes. pushed a lot around.
Well, fortunately, we're not there anymore. So that is the structure of the meal. And then, as I said, there will be musical performances and stories from the evening.
What sort of music?
A friend of mine, Amelia Hogan, who has performed at Aubergine a number of times and has a couple of CDs out. She's a wonderful Irish singer, and she'll be doing sort of a set. She actually has a CD that she's recording right now that is about the Irish experience of immigration to the U.S. And the majority of people that were on board the Titanic were actually third-class immigrants. Mm-hmm. That's really how these steamship lines made their money. That was their bread and butter, was helping people to get across. Mm-hmm. All the first-class stuff, of course, was really great, but really where the money was to be made was in these one-way trips, mostly Irish, many Scandinavians. And so she's going to do a set of songs about that experience of leaving the Irish homeland and hopes for the new world and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then I am also in the process of finding a violinist who can do some appropriate pieces.
Oh, great.
Out of the White Star Songbook, which also survives.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Cool. How many people died?
About 1,500, so one for every one of your guests over the entire 16 years you've been doing Mouthful.
Yeah.
They say 1,512 is the best.
And how many lived?
Just shy of 700.
Oh, I hadn't realized that many.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking it was fewer.
No, but it could have been a lot more than that, actually. I mean, lifeboat number one went away with 12 people in it, and it could hold 40. But part of this, and this gets to these many if only stories, it's very clear that there was a terrible lack of leadership on the part of the officers. The lower officers did a very good job, but the captain, who had been quoted in the newspaper after captaining the Titanic sister ship, the Olympic, across the previous year, as saying that he didn't see any reason why a ship would ever need to sink again, because they were so advanced now.
Oh, gosh.
He'd never had a major incident in his entire career himself.
He
didn't know what to do, and he clearly fogged up. He was not decisive. He was not directive. He kind of went into a kind of helpless state. Mm. And with that lack of leadership, it was very difficult. The directions that were given for loading people on the starboard side of the ship were different than they were on the port side of the ship. So officers on one side believed that they could allow men to get into the boats if there weren't any women around. On the other side, it was like, no men, period. So many stories like this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the biggest failing, however, was that the ship didn't have enough lifeboats, and it had been designed to have enough lifeboats.
What happened?
The president of the White Star Line decided that it would take up too much deck space and they would be unattractive. This is the same man who was on board the Titanic and somehow managed to find his way into a lifeboat himself, even though he was a first-class man, J. Bruce Ismay. So, once again, you get to this incredible bouquet of stories, coincidences. It's it's just really a remarkable tale. Not to mention, of course, that it's sort of our own version of a real life Greek morality play. Mm-hmm. You know, the hubris of humans against the forces of nature and the gods strike them down, killing the wealthiest man in the world and so forth.
Who was the wealthiest man in the world at the time?
John Jacob Astor III was the wealthiest man in the world at the time.
And he went down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there are a bunch of stories about that. He had scandalously divorced his wife, and he had married a 17-year-old, and she was on the ship with him, and she was pregnant, and she survived.
She survived. Although, oh, and what became of her life? Do we know much?
Actually, she committed suicide. She did not live as long as he did. She lived into the late 40s. She lived into the 40s. And then eventually she had several additional marriages, and it seems like her life was very hard. The conditions of his will had given her a lot of his money unless she remarried.
Oh.
And she kind of held off on that for a long time, but then she finally did remarry. And of course, in those days, she didn't really have the option of just living with somebody and continuing to collect the checks. So, you know, finally she decided, I want to be with someone, and then she abandoned the money, and then came the depression. So it seems like she had a pretty hard time.
And the child, do we know?
I don't really know. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he was John Jacob Astor IV, as I recall. So, yeah, he would have lived, and his descendants would be alive today.
Interesting. It's sort of embarrassing. It's not most of what I know, but most of my emotional connection to the Titanic, we could say, comes from Upstairs Downstairs. Lady Marjorie.
Yes.
You know? And I think it was the end maybe of the either the end of the first or second season, where she's out on the porch on Eaton Place. And all of a sudden she just shivers and said, I just felt someone walk over my grave. And that ends that season. And then the beginning, if I have this right, the beginning of the next season, she's going off on the Titanic. And then several episodes later, her handmaid shows up.
Yes.
And
yes.
she has kept hold of Lady Marjorie's jewels.
Uh-huh.
And she's holding them, and she won't let them go.
Wow.
I mean, physically they can't get them. I mean, I think it's Rose. I'd like to think it was Hazel, but I think it's Rose who calms her down enough and is able to get her to give up the jewelry box. Yes. I mean, not because there's any compelling, I mean, there's no sinister reason they have to wrench it out of her hands, but I mean, she can't really do anything, you know, gripping this box.
Right.
It was a very touching subplot in that story.
The new BBC series Downton Abbey, similarly, starts on the morning of April 15th.
Oh, really?
With a telegram delivery that indicates that the heir, who is supposed to marry the daughter at Downton Abbey and make everything neat and tidy for passing along the title to the beautiful castle and so forth, has died on the Titanic. Mm. And so there you are in this moment of time, which is very clever on Julian Fellowes' part, this moment of transition from the structure and assumptions of the Victorian Edwardian world, and in short order you're into World War I, and I would imagine that in the third season we're going to now be looking at the 1920s, which is a completely different thing, you know, in the Spanish flu in 1918.
Yeah.
I mean, huge transition.
Spanish flu was 18 million people, 20 million people.
Something like that. Killed more people than World War One did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Including my favorite character on Upstairs Downstairs.
It is a little morbid to sort of go, oh boy, this is so cool, all these people dying. That's really not what it's about.
No,
it's a tremendously dramatic and poignant, in some cases funny, in some cases triumphant, in many cases very tragic and ironic set of stories. It's a huge sort of bouquet of different narratives. Mm-hmm. And it's a moment worth remembering. And so we're going to hold this event. Obviously, doing something like this at this level of elegance is expensive.
Yes.
Tickets are $165
per
person.
I didn't even think that was that bad. $165.
I'm delighted to hear that, actually.
And it includes the wines?
Yes.
Does it include gratuity?
Yes. Tip, gratuity.
Everything.
Entertainment, yes. Okay. Now, that's two glasses of wine.
Okay.
So if you want to
buy a bottle of wine.
Of that's available, no host. Uh-huh. But I agree with you. I think that it's that for a unique event like this, it would be a really wonderful thing to do, and that's not that great a price, not that expensive.
Yeah, and especially
a price.
For, I mean, if it does end up being limited to 24 people, I mean, seems
pretty special. Yeah.
Yeah, and you get to dress up.
Yes.
Where are you sending people? For attire, if they don't have it.
I'm encouraging people to go to Disguise the Limit in Railroad Square. Uh-huh. They can rent Edwardian clothing for women, and they can rent tails and white tie for men.
Yeah, you know, they can also go to right down the street, then go to Haute Couture.
I'm sorry, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
That's what I mean, Haute Couture.
Haute Couture, yes. I'm
seeing the signs on the same street, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Haute Couture they have some great stuff. In fact, if I were to go, I know the dress I would go in and try on. but yeah, they're a great place, and they really, Marta, she will really spend a lot of time with you, making sure that you get into the absolute right attire.
I met with her last week, and like me, she's... you know, kind of a dress-up in costumes geek. My wife and I do a lot of theme parties, you know, different historical periods, different imaginary periods, like the retro future, you know, the future of the Jetsons, the future we never got with the flying cars, and all that kind of thing.
Well, you know, you're actually right on right now. Mid-century modern, which I think of the Jetsons as mid-century modern.
Yes.
Mid-century modern has made such a huge comeback these days. I mean, there's the magazine Atomic Ranch. There are amazing stores. Right. Oh my God, amazing stores with that style. And my daughter, my younger daughter, Nicole, who lives in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, she's very into mid-century modern. I will walk into her house and look around. It's like, oh God, that's just like the lamp my mother had, and I hated it. But there's a real beauty to it.
It's funny how those things come around, because yes, by the end of the 70s, and of course taste really hit its absolute bottom at the end of the 70s.
Shag, avocado green shag carpets, avocado green refrigerators. That was not good. There's no way you can make that stuff good.
I'll never be nostalgic for that, I'm afraid. It's just, you know, Aztec gold.
Aztec gold and kitchen appliances. Yep.
But nonetheless, Danish modern furniture, Eames and Calder.
Oh, Eames,
kind of design.
Yeah, Calder, absolutely.
You know, all that very straight, geometrical, the kidney shape. Of course, we don't have ashtrays now, but the sort of kidney shaped turquoise.
You can put other things
ashtray,
in them.
all that sort of thing. It is back, and there is a. There's a tremendous beauty to it, but I think the other piece of why it's becoming so popular right now is a nostalgia piece. I think that a lot of the boomers are getting to a point where they're starting to think about what their childhood was like. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's pretty cool myself. And, of course, Mad Men is another trigger.
Mad Men is just the epitome of it. I think we're going to take a little break, and we will be right back here on Mouthful. What you hear on KRCB is patchwork programming, squares of time devoted to a kaleidoscope of music and talk. But I don't think of KRCB as a patchwork quilt. To me, it's a candy store. There's Freight Train Boogies, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Jazz Connections Nut Clusters, Radio Free Sonoma's Zots, Pillow Storms Pop Rocks, Holy Cow's Goody Gumdrops, Lady Spins the Blues Molasses Taffy, Performance Today's Pettifors, Living Proof's Dove Milk Chocolate Hearts, Red Shoes Rodeo is a Licorice Whip, Mouthful a Lollipop, Rhythm and Roots a Sugar Daddy, Beyond and Back Black Licorice, Our Roots are Showing a Peanut-Filled Caramel, This American Life's Obviously Cracker Jacks. You can ensure your candy store will always be open at 707-584-2020 or krcb.org/donate. It's KRCB, keeping the lick in public radio. Yep, that's Mouthful's job, all right. We just had a little technical glitch, thanks to my boot. So, played a couple of little spots there for you. So, people get tickets at tinyurl.org.
tinyurl.com/first class dinner.
First class dinner.
And that's all one word.
First class dinner.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to be writing about this. I think I'll put it into Mouthful, the column, but I think I'm also going to do a seasonal pantry about it.
Oh, wow, that's great.
As we get closer.
That's great.
So you can read about it there as well. But, you know, if you're interested, you ought to check it out right away. And you are welcome, Mark, to stay around while we talk about going back in time on this one as well. Or I know that you interrupted a Sunday night dinner to be here.
I did, and I have to go back to see my my friends and actually have the dinner because this slot opened on late notice. I think they're probably eating, but I have to go back and get my portion, so I am going to go.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And good luck, and I'll be talking to you more about this. It's really a great idea.
That's great.
I wish you great success.
Come on. Come on, folks. Put on tailcoat or a really elegant dress and come down and see.
Yeah, get your waist down to 20 inches.
The website has a page about dress that explains what you need to know about dress, and also a page with some history, and you can buy tickets and directions to the restaurant, all that kind of stuff. So, again, it's tinyurl.com/firstclassdinner.
Great.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, and have a great dinner.
You too.
Okay, Jennifer, it's you and me and Tomato Smash.
Yes, it is. It's a family food product, and it's based, curiously enough, on a 1912 recipe.
No way.
Same year as the Titanic.
I'm
disaster.
So intuitive. I knew there was a reason
that
I asked you.
That is a crazy connection. And it's based on my Aunt Aggie's tomato relish. Every summer, she used to pick the tomatoes in the garden and make this. Our family's
grown
up eating
this. Where was she?
From Picton, Ontario, Canada.
Wow, cool.
And our recipe uses local organic tomatoes, and it's also got peppers and onions and vinegar. And it's got a very piquant taste and a chunky consistency, something like a salsa. Mm-hmm. So the taste is between a salsa and a ketchup. And last year, for the first time, salsa sales topped ketchup sales.
Oh, is it for the first time? Oh, I thought they topped them for a while.
And Heinz ketchup started the same year that Aunt Aggie started making this. So that's kind of
Heinz ketchup started in 1912?
Yes.
Oh, God, that's hilarious.
And it tastes unbelievably good, spooned onto hot dogs, on hamburgers, paired with cheese and crackers, or even with scrambled eggs, potatoes. We've had it on broiled cod, poured over Dungeness crab cakes. It's very versatile.
So you're going to hand me a taste?
Yes.
So, and I know that you've been making this, I assume someone in your family has been making this since Aunt Aggie first started.
Actually, my uncle Ted has been making this and sending it. And we have made it as well. We grow tomatoes every summer. And we're very fond of it. It's something that my father started and decided to take it to a new level and introduce it to a commercial market. And I happened to tell him about a food forum that was held at Barn Diva Restaurant last summer. And I didn't know if he'd go. He did. And it was a panel hosted by Marcy Smothers and Clark mm-hmm. Wolf. And it was on the future of agriculture and farming.
Right.
And he went and he sat down next to Marilee Olson, who runs the kitchen at Cam Marin mm-hmm. Food Works. And just last month in the North Bay Biz Journal, mm-hmm. there's an article on that kitchen, which is where Aunt Aggie's will be made.
Oh, cool.
And there's actually even a paragraph talking about Aunt Aggie's.
Oh, that's
in
great.
The article.
That's great. And there's also now that organization in Sebastopol that will help entrepreneurs getting, especially food businesses, but they want to help people starting businesses
exactly.
get them launched. Mm-hmm. So are they part of that as well?
You know, I'm not sure about the one in Sebastopol, but I know the one in Marin, that is the design. That's the Food Works arm of Cam Marin that they help beginning entrepreneurs.
Uh-huh.
And so they act as our co-packer.
Oh, as your co-packer. Okay, mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's quite good. It's very, it's got that tangy, sweet side.
Yes.
That ketchup does. But it doesn't have the objectionable texture of ketchup.
Oh, I so agree. It's so bourgeois. I so agree.
You know, ketchup, I use ketchup, but I'll use it in certain recipes. It's very, very rare that I will use it on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not something I've ever really cared for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But no, this is very nice.
And so it's excellent with a good cheese, and especially, honestly, on a hot dog or hamburger, once you serve it on a hot dog or hamburger, you just don't want to eat it again without it.
Interesting. I can imagine it on fried potatoes.
Yes.
I think it would be really, really good on fried potatoes. Or even you could even have it on an omelet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when are you thinking that you might be ready to go, we'd be ready to get it out there?
I project probably the end of April or by May 1st.
Okay, that's really soon.
Mm-hmm. And my vision is to start selling it in local farmers markets.
Mm-hmm. Have you been talking to market managers?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Just begun. And also to winery tasting rooms.
Another good idea.
With cheese and crackers. Local restaurants.
Mm-hmm. And cheese, then, cheese places, too. Places that actually sell cheese, like the cheese shop up in Healdsburg.
Yes.
And also places like DeVero, the DeVero tasting room.
Yep, that's on my list.
Okay, cool.
And then some boutique delis and groceries as well. Mm-hmm. And everywhere I've gone, everyone said we'll order.
Really? Uh-huh. Oh, congratulations. That's really great. So you made a big batch from last year's harvest.
Yes. And now I have 300 jars that will be complete in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Cool. What do you think it's going to sell for?
Probably $6.99.
Uh-huh. And I love this picture of Aunt Egg. It's really a great picture. She looks like a Gibson girl.
You know? I know, that's why it's so funny hearing
this. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Who designed this?
Dennis Bolt in Sebastopol.
Oh, Dennis Bolt. We know Dennis Bolt, yes. And as we have the label here. It's green print along with some red, of course, on a cream and white colored background. Is it going to be pretty similar to this?
I am not sure. I think that because we decided to change the name to Tomato Smash, we feel that that has a more contemporary sound and connotation to it.
It's just nice. It's not... No one else has done that.
It's sort
of
exciting. It takes something... But we are keeping the Aunt Aggies because that's the sentimental family attachment.
And plus, it's a great logo. It's really, really a nice logo. And I see that it's a little bit small... But I see that you do have 1912 recipe. Well, it's the 1912 recipe that needs to be bigger. And it's the perfect year to launch it. So you should really play off that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, really, really. I would really play off the 100 years. It's a great idea. Is your dad really happy?
He is. And curiously enough, he went to this forum, as I told you about, and he made... a wonderful friendship with Marilee Olson. Mm-hmm. And then unexpectedly...
I always get Marilee. I think I get her mixed up with Marilyn, because Marilee doesn't also own Mimi's, Screaming Mimi's,
no.
Does she?
No.
Yeah, that's Marilyn. I think that's Marilyn Olson.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's, I'm not positive it's Olson, but it's Marilyn and Marilee. But I do, and it just takes my brain a minute to get around both of them.
They're similar. Well, unexpectedly, my father passed away in the midst of this process.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And she was test batching it down at this kitchen in San Rafael. And she thought it was so wonderful that this was someone's dream and that she was starting this. He actually was her first customer with this commercial kitchen food works. Operation. And so I just have felt that I needed to take this forward.
Of course. I decided
to do that. And I find myself channeling my dad as I talk to people about it. Mm-hmm. He had a tremendous enthusiasm and a real command of motivational language.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I need to take that to the next level.
Well, good for you for doing it. What is the lineage? It's the family tree. Who was Aunt Aggie in relationship to your father and to you?
She was from my paternal side.
Okay.
So she goes back probably 4 generations.
Mm-hmm. So she was like your father's great aunt.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. One more pleading break here on Mouthful.
How did I find myself there? Down a back alley, ready to make a break for it. It was now or never. It all began when the phone rang. And I knew, I'll admit it, I knew I hadn't made my pledge to KRCB. Sure, I assumed I'd get to it, but now I wondered if it was too late. I heard the sound of distant sirens, squealing tires getting closer. So I ran, and everything told me this was it. The moment when I might be able to save everything I believed in. My one chance for redemption. A faint light glimmered in the distance, and I knew I could make it. A phone booth. In this day and age, an actual phone booth was there before me. I dialed the number. 707-584-2020. The number that meant so much to me. And I pledged. Pledged my membership. Pledged in a life-saving act that brought me back from the brink. KRCB Radio, cooler than a Vicuna fedora, hotter than a Maltese falcon. Follow me and donate now at krcb.org or dial 707-584-2020.
Yeah, just a little bit more about what's going on here. We're trying to do a non-begging membership drive. I think it's a really innovative thing to do, and I just love a lot of the creativity that has come out of it. I did two long pieces. Actually, no, I did one long piece that I hope makes it onto the air by tomorrow. I had a great deal of fun with it. There's nothing like playing hooky and spending a whole day trying to rewrite Annabelle Lee in The Raven. It's a two-minute pledge pitch, but it was a really great fun. And if nothing else, you know, it's a lot more fun than just telling you all the reasons that you should call and join. I've been doing that for 16 and a half years. And you know all those reasons, and I'm just trusting you that I think everyone who listens to Mouthful goes and becomes a member. I hope that that's true. Okay, so back to Aunt Aggie's. We should look for it the end of April and the beginning of May. And once, you know, I'd probably give it maybe 6 weeks, and then you can start asking your local market, hey, do you have it? That's always something that will perk, you know, create interest. What sort of reception have you gotten from farmers markets? Have you talked to, Paula Downing?
No, not yet, but I have my son working on the Ferry Street Market in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
To see about that.
Careful.
What are your cautions?
You'll sell it all out of the area, you know, and it will all be gone and there won't be any for us.
So I love it.
That's my caution.
Okay. Well taken.
But yeah, we've got, now that we have 3 year-round markets here. We have the Santa Rosa Market, which takes place on Wednesday and Saturday. We have Sonoma, which has, I think, been year-round since it started. 30 years, I mean, quite some time ago. That's on Friday mornings. And then for the first time, Sebastopol has gone year-round. So normally, in previous years, Sebastopol has closed right after Thanksgiving, that next Sunday. But they've stayed open. And it was really well attended today. I've gone every week that I was in town. I missed a couple. Well, actually, the two Sundays I was gone were holidays. So I've been to everyone. And at first, it was like, people don't know about it yet. And the last few weeks, it's like, okay.
It's catching on.
People realize that the market hasn't ended. So, you know, I think that's a really good place.
Tell me about some of your finds today.
Okay, what did I find today? You know what's really has gotten very popular, and it's very good, and that's the pea shoots from, it's Oh Tommy Boys and First Light. Oh, Tommy Boys was the farm out on Carroll Road or Carroll Lane, which is in Valley Forge. And I had the people who ran that on, and it was in the family for a very long time. And they were dry farming potatoes. It was one of the places in the county where you can successfully dry farm. But those people, and I'm really sorry for not accessing their name immediately, they sold the property. About 3 years ago, they sold the property. As it turns out, the owners have wanted those potatoes to continue growing there. So Nathan Boone, who has operated First Light Farm, and he farms in a number of places. He's now taken over Oh Tommy Boys and has kept the name for the potatoes. So that area out there in Two Rock is really good for potatoes. So, but he's also growing pea shoots. And he brings them. At first he was bringing, I think I saw just like two flats. And they were, you know, if you got there an hour into the market, they were gone. And today I noticed that he had many, many flats. And he harvests them with a pair of scissors. And he, right there, we harvest them, weighs them out. They're $3 or $3.50 a bag. They're so fresh. And they're just this beautiful taste of spring. And if you've ever had them at Gary Chu's or some other Chinese restaurant, you'll know. They're easy to cook. Actually, I heard a woman today who was buying some, who says she's messed them up every time. And I think what is happening is she's cooking them at too low a heat for too long a time. So you want to just get your wok over high heat, put in a little oil. I usually do toasted sesame oil, put in a little oil, toss in those pea shoots with a bunch of press. I think this is a good time to use pressed garlic. Toss them until they just wilt. A little salt or a little soy sauce, and there you go. You have a fabulous side dish that is just really, really good. So that was really the thing. That and bones. They were fabulous lamb bones at the market today. And I, you know, and the Mouthful's little mascot, Joey. Joey eats very well. So it was really a treat. And, you know, they're frozen, of course. So I was outside on the cement with a hammer pounding the bones to separate them.
Wow.
And then you just put a bone. And if you have a dog, this is a really good thing to do. Just put a bone, break them up while they're frozen. And just put a bone in one bone in a sandwich bag, and then put all those into a bigger bag, a freezer bag, and then you just pull one out whenever you're going to need one. And, you know, wait about 10 minutes after it's out of the refrigerator to give it to your dog. It keeps them busy for hours. I'm learning a lot. I've had a dog for 2 years now, and I think I'm an expert. I act like an expert. I'm not an expert. But now, farmers markets, do you attend farmers markets regularly?
I go to the one in Santa Rosa.
Santa Rosa, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's also one in Healdsburg as well.
Oh, Healdsburg Market's great. I'll be really excited when that one opens in, I think it opens in the beginning of May.
What about the Wednesday night market?
Wednesday night market, I think, opens right after Memorial Day. It used to open earlier and close later, but now I think it's Memorial Day to Labor Day. And then the Petaluma Farmers Market opens, I believe it's the third week in May. And then we have some other markets, I think Cotati, Bodega Bay, maybe Glen Ellen, opening the beginning of June.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, I think about the local markets as well, like Andy's and Big John's and
Oliver's.
And, of course, Oliver's.
Oliver's.
That's
Oliver's,
the flagship.
Yeah, Oliver's has such good policies for local mm-hmm. vendors. I think they have, from everything I've been able to find out, they have the best policies because they give the best real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's so much in grocery stores is about real estate that you need that good spot. And then you also need them. Oliver's features, they have shelf tags, but they will also do specials.
Mm-hmm.
And some markets will charge more because it's local. And I think we really should be encouraging people to get local things.
Mm-hmm. And these are organic tomatoes also. So.
Yes, and you didn't grow them all.
No.
No, okay, good.
No.
That would be...
No, we have a great source, though.
Uh-huh. Oh, where about? Which?
Well, originally we were going to have to rely on Sacramento Valley tomatoes. Oh. But now we have a canned product that's organic.
Uh-huh.
So now we have year-round capability.
You can produce year-round.
Yes.
Oh, so you could sell a whole lot at Ferry Plaza.
I can keep it coming.
Oh, I was thinking you were going to just sell your entire harvest from Ferry Plaza.
No,
and we'd all miss
a bigger
out.
Vision. You know, I think mm-hmm. about ballparks, you know, Wrigley Field and
places. Oh, wow. You have a very big
hot dogs.
You have a very big vision. Okay.
And Costco needs to have diced onions and sauerkraut and Aunt Aggie's tomato smash.
Well, you know what? You've got to get Sonoma County somewhere on this label.
I wrote on the front, thoughtfully made in the wine country.
Yeah, I see wine country. I think you have to get California. I think you have to get Sonoma County on there, especially now we have that guy on The Bachelor.
For quite some time,
you know, Sonoma County has such cash, but now that's taken it to another level. There are several things that are doing that. So, it's a really cool thing. And on that note, we are at here. I should let Mike see what he thinks of it. Maybe I'll grab a cracker. Oh, cool. So remember, if you want information about the recreation of the Titanic dinner on April 14th, you go to tinyurl.com/firstclassdinner. Oh, that's the other question I was going to ask you, Jennifer. Website yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
We have an email, and aggies@gmail.com if anyone has any questions.
At aggies@gmail.com, and we'll watch for a website. And if you want any of this information, one really easy way to go to get it is just go to Mouthful's page on Facebook. If you haven't liked it yet, please like it. I want to get to 500. I'm at 443. You can also always send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to both of my guests.
Thank you so much.
Last minute invitations.
Thank you for the opportunity. Loved it.
You bet. And meet me back here for another yummy episode of the One Country's Most Delicious Hour, Mouthful, here on KRCB.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing, to the Lord let praises be.